Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by great unions like Madison Firefighters Local 311, Madison Teachers, and Madison Teamsters Local 695. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. John, at a time when Donald Trump is under serious investigation, not only from Robert Mueller, but also the Southern District of New York, a time where Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister, is in huge trouble in Canada with a major scandal that may take him down, and Benjamin Netanyahu is about to be indicted. You think, and of course there's major corruption going on in Chicago that's going to probably change the direction of that city. Here's something that's rather refreshing, listening to someone who's dignified and honest.
You know, I mean, come on now. I mean, when you got, according to the Washington Post, our president has made at least 8,718 false or misleading statements. That's stunning. That's not what we teach our children. I don't teach mine that. And for whatever reason, you sound like you got caught up in it. And some kind of way, I hope that you will. I know that it's painful going to prison. I know it's got to be painful being called a rat. And let me explain. A lot of people don't know the significance of that. But I live in the inner city of Baltimore. All right. And when you call somebody a rat, that's one of the worst things you can call them, because when they go to prison, that means a snitch. I'm just saying. And so, the president called you a rat. We're better than that. We really are. And I'm hoping that all of us can get back to this democracy that we want and that we should be passing on to our children so that they can do better than what we did. And so you wonder whether people believe you. I don't know. I don't know whether they believe you. But the fact is that you come, you have your head down, and this has got to be one of the hardest things that you could do. Let me tell you the picture that really, really pained me. You were leaving the prison, you were leaving the courthouse, and I guess it's your daughter, had braces or something on. Man, that thing hurt me. As a father of two daughters, it hurt me. And I can imagine how it must feel for you. But I'm just saying to you, I want to, first of all, thank you. I know that this has been hard. I know that you face a lot. I know that you are worried about your family. But this is a part of your destiny. And hopefully, this portion of your destiny will lead to a better Michael Cohen, a better Donald Trump, a better United States of America, and a better world. And I mean that from the depths of my heart. When we're dancing with the angels, the question will be asked, in 2019, what do we do to make sure we kept our democracy intact? Did we stand on the sidelines and say nothing? Did we play games? And I'm tired of these statements saying, people come in here and say, oh, this is the first hearing. It is not the first hearing. The first hearing was with regard to prescription drugs. Remember, a little girl, a lady said there, Miss Wortham, her daughter died because she could not get $333 a month in insulin. That was our first hearing. Second hearing, H.R. 1, voting rights, corruption in government. Come on now. We can do more than one thing. And we have got to get back to normal. With that, this meeting is adjourned.
Can we just skip the nominating process for president and just nominate him?
Oh, he would be an outstanding president. There's simply no question of that. Elijah Cummings, you know, it's an interesting thing.
Sorry, that was a long clip, but I wanted to everybody hear all
great.
Of it.
I also think people should hear it, right? People should listen closely to it, understand what he's saying. Because, you know, we don't do this enough in our politics, right? We don't put the momentary news, the big development of the day, into some kind of perspective, right? And so what he did in a couple minutes there was he went very human. Right? He suggested to folks, well, here's how you might want to look at Michael Cohen, right? Guy the president calls a rat. Guy who, you know, clearly has done the wrong thing and is going to be punished for it, but is a human being. And so he puts it into that perspective. And then he also did something else that's really important. He said, you know, look, we're not just here to listen to Michael Cohen or to talk about Donald Trump. There's a bigger agenda. There's all sorts of things going on. We have policies that we care about and issues that we want to deal with. But this is important. This is at the core of what we're about. This is about whether we have a functional republic that operates under the rule of law and the Constitution. And rarely do you get that.
Well, people,
you know, the last time I saw it, I'm going to just ask one thing. Last time I heard something like that, well, maybe not the last time, but one of the times I heard something like that, from a guy named Peter Rodino.
Right.
Another urban lawyer who ended up running a kind of important hearing.
So at a time where people have a lack of faith in institutions, not just government, but business, education, also people have a lack of faith in everything. And you see these scandals going on in Israel and Canada, the United States. Going on in Chicago. As Democrats look for a candidate in 2020, you know, Jimmy Carter was able to seize on that moment in 1976. Are we going to see another moment like that where someone's honesty may be their best asset?
I hope so. You know, look, I will tell you this. The best asset. Now, here's an interesting thing, by the way. Do you know what Elijah Cummings has been for a very long time? A politician.
Well, that's true.
You know, Peter Rodino, the guy who ran the Watergate hearings, was a politician. So don't fall into the trap, and I know you won't, of thinking that you know, that honest player, right, is a non-politician.
Oh, no, I wasn't inferring that at all.
I know you're not. Yeah. I know you're not, but what I want to say is, this is an important thing. What you want is an honest player who has political skills.
Mm-hmm.
Because the challenge of our moment is that Donald Trump's presidency, which should end now, right? It should end immediately.
Like this second.
Yeah, exactly. Donald Trump's presidency is harmful because of his wrongdoing, because of what a bad president he is. He's not competent to be president of the United States, as his little trip to Vietnam just illustrated. But the challenge as regards Donald Trump is also what he is not doing right now. He's not addressing climate change. He's not addressing automation, which is going to change our entire work life. He is not addressing the fundamentals of what's going on in American manufacturing. He is not addressing civil rights and civil liberties and the evolving realities of this republic. He is an awful president, not just because of what he does, but because of what he does.
What he doesn't do.
For the next president. Right.
All right. Before we get too far off Cohen, let me play a clip from Michael Cohen.
So first I want to thank you, Chairman, because I appreciate the opportunity to share some final thoughts. I've acknowledged I have made my own mistakes, and I have owned up to them publicly and under oath. But silence and complicity in the face of the daily destruction of our basic norms and civility to one another will not be one of them. I did things and I acted improperly, at times at Mr. Trump's behest. I blindly followed his demands. My loyalty to Mr. Trump has cost me everything. My family's happiness, friendships, my law license, my company, my livelihood, my honor, my reputation, and soon my freedom. And I will not sit back, say nothing, and allow him to do the same to the country. Indeed, given my experience working for Mr. Trump, I fear that if he loses the election in 2020, that there will never be a peaceful transition of power. And this is why I agreed to appear before you today. In closing, I'd like to say directly to the president, we honor our veterans even in the rain. You tell the truth even when it doesn't aggrandize you. You respect the law and our incredible law enforcement agents. You don't villainize them. You don't disparage generals, Gold Star families, prisoners of war, and other heroes who had the courage to fight for this country. You don't attack the media and those who question what you don't like or what you don't want them to say. And you take responsibility for your own dirty deeds. You don't use your power of your bully pulpit to destroy the credibility of those who speak out against you. You don't separate families from one another or demonize those looking to America for a better life. You don't vilify people based on the God they pray to, and you don't cuddle up to our adversaries at the expense of our allies. And finally, you don't shut down the government before Christmas and New Year's just to simply appease your base. This behavior is churlish, it denigrates the office of the president, and it's simply un-American. And it's not you. So to those who support the president and his rhetoric, as I once did, I pray the country doesn't make the same mistakes that I have made or pay the heavy price that my family and I are paying. And I thank you very much for this additional time, Chairman. Thank you.
You know, they'll never need to make a movie about this because that was such a chilling moment in both those summations. Yeah. It was really remarkable.
Yeah. I agree. And it goes to the heart of the moment that we're in. What Michael Cohen did, I mean, there's a lot that happened with Cohen's testimony. This is an important thing to understand. It was very poorly covered in the moment. If you watch the commentary as it was going on, even right after it, in some cases, you had people saying, well, I don't know if he put too much new on the table, or I don't know. You know, they were like, they were playing all, you know, just silly comments by people. But if you know anything about how we've had presidential accountability in the United States, how it has worked, there's a couple of things to remember. First off, the person who brings us to the accountability moment is never somebody who's been a
perfect player,
perfectly virtuous person, right? It's never somebody who did everything right. It's somebody who was on the inside who actually knows what's going on and has realized how awful it is, right? So you have this moment of somebody in, you know, kind of revelation. That's number one. So you saw that, right? In and of itself, that is huge. We don't get that very often, and we should understand it. Two, he brought checks. You know, I mean, this guy didn't just show up with an accusation.
Yeah, and how many people sign checks with a Sharpie the way Donald Trump does?
Yeah, also how many people, you know, in the White House conspire to violate campaign finance laws?
But those checks were written while he was president of the United States. He probably signed those in the Oval Office.
Wherever he signed it, whatever he authorized, whatever he did, he committed a fully impeachable offense. If you read the second article of impeachment against Richard Nixon, approved by the House Judiciary Committee. If you look down the pieces of it, there are unlawful acts related to campaign finance law.
Well,
I mean, it's like the parallels are real. So I just, let me finish this core thought, though. So number one, so it's not a virtuous person always, but they, you have a moment of revelation. Number two, this guy brought specific evidence. He outlined a case. His presentation, his initial presentation, was essentially a brief. And number three, and this may be the most telling thing of the moment, the president's allies made almost no effort to defend him against charges that he's a fraud, a cheat, a dishonest player. It's astounding when you think about it that all they did was attack Michael Cohen, who basically, instead of trying to fight back with him, you know, just took those attacks in. It was almost like watching some jiu-jitsu.
Yes, and they called him a liar hundreds of times. And, of course, the next day, the New York Times comes out with the story that Donald and Ivanka Trump had been lying all along about Jared Kushner's clearance, that, in fact, the president did intervene and went over the head of multiple agencies, much against the United States' best interests, and gave his son-in-law that clearance. And they were lying about it. They said they didn't interfere, and it's not true. They did. All right, we'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works. Joining us again, John Nichols, Associate Editor of the Capital Times and The Nation. All right, Governor Evers made his first address for a budget to the legislature. And John, I have to tell you, watching those Republicans, it was pretty crazy to watch them not even applaud the things that he brought up that Republicans had previously introduced. And he talked about that we could work together to get passed in a bipartisan way. They looked constipated.
They looked in pain. You know, because
well, I guess that's the same thing.
It can be the same, but they always look constipated. They just look. It looked like a more painful case. But here's the really interesting thing. I think you were literally watching in real time a moment of revelation for those Republicans, because they were realizing that this guy who they had kind of thought was going to be a very mild mannered, you know, person, they're basically a guy they could roll on a whole bunch of things, you know, came in with a very nuanced, very smart budget that will have popular appeal and that does, as you suggest, you know, incorporate elements of what they wanted to do in. And I think they were in such shock that they didn't even know to applaud for places where they had won.
Right.
You know, now, for instance, just to give you one quick example, and we should talk about all the great things in the budget, but there was a point in the budget where, to my mind, Tony Evers was wrong. He proposed getting rid, or he is proposing, as part of his overall plan, to get rid of the minimum markup on gas, which is a way to protect small gas stations, small, you know, especially...
Oh,
you know,
with that, was that what the 14 cents was? Okay. Yes,
yeah,
he's wrong. He's wrong about that. Yeah.
He is wrong about And yet, that is something the Republicans have been advocating for my entire life.
My God, Scott Jensen should have been up in the gallery doing jumping jacks, right?
Right. And so he finally, and you know where he got the idea to, you know, dial down the minimum markup and then have a small increase in the gas tax? From them.
Well, it's kind of like a Romney Care being adopted by Obama. Although I did notice that John Nygren clapped when Governor Evers talked about banning the box, which means if you have a criminal conviction, you don't have to put that in your job application. I wonder why John Nygren would clap for that, John. Isn't that interesting?
I'm glad he clapped. And I'll take my applause for that very good initiative wherever it comes from, for whatever reason.
All right, here is some clips of Governor Evers from yesterday.
I've said all along that reforming our criminal justice system is an area where I know Republicans and Democrats can work together. So earlier this week, I announced we're going to return kids who are 17 to the juvenile justice system. And I'm investing more than $200 million in additional funds so that we can get kids out of Lincoln Hills and get them closer to home as soon as we safely and responsibly can. I know.
And, of course, Dewey Strobel wasn't clapping for that. Let me play one more, and then I'll have you comment on both these.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we also need to come to terms with the fact that nonviolent drug arrests are contributing to overcrowding and economic inequity, instability, and insecurity in our state. That's why I announced a few weeks ago that our budget will decriminalize marijuana possession for 25 grams or less. And we also have to ensure that once someone encounters our criminal justice system, that they're receiving adequate, fair, and vigorous representation. So we're increasing the private bar reimbursement rate to $70 an hour, and we're providing more than 25 additional assistant district attorneys across our state.
Now that one got a few Republicans to actually applaud. So, taking the state in a different direction on criminal justice has changed so much over the last few years. I mean, this is one thing, to Donald Trump's credit, that he's moved the ball forward on a federal level. Tommy Thompson has been great on this. I never thought we'd hear this stuff.
Well, I think really what you heard in that section was the Tommy Thompson Memorial, component of the budget address, right? What Tony Evers was saying there is a restatement, in some ways a variation on the message that former governor and mainstream Republican Tommy Thompson has been advocating for, you know, the last at least few years, and really kind of ramping it up on. And the reason I say that, why I think that's really important to emphasize, is that where Evers is going here is not someplace that should be seen as difficult. I mean, it's bold and brave and correct, but in fact, he is outlining an agenda that is in tune on a number of issues with where mainstream Republicanism is moving. It isn't necessarily there yet. I understand there's folks that are going to resist. Jeff Sessions may never get there, but this is important.
Wait a minute. Let me give you my Jeff Sessions imitation, okay?
Good
people don't smoke marijuana. He said it.
I know, and if he had smoked marijuana, don't you think so many things would have been better?
Would have been much better.
The whole of it, I think it would all be better. Yeah.
Okay, so... Anyway.
So this is important because I think that this is doable stuff. This is, I don't know where you're going to get resistance from the Republicans and where you're going to get push and pull, but my sense is, and I hope that Tony Evers will bring Governor Thompson in to testify for some of this. I hope that he will bring other conservative and libertarian-leaning Republicans in to the process here and seek, no matter what happens with the whole of the budget, and we know there's going to be a brutal battle over a lot of this budget, but no matter what happens with the whole of the budget, that he will seek to, you know, kind of carve this out for sure and make this happen, because it's doable and it's really good.
Here is Tony Evers talking about health care.
I've said all along we need to expand Medicaid in Wisconsin, and according to a recent Marquette Law poll, 62% of Wisconsinites agree. 82,000 more Wisconsinites will have access to affordable, quality health care coverage. And because we're accepting these federal dollars, we have the opportunity to invest in programs that improve health care access and affordability across our state.
You know, when I saw the Republicans sitting on their hands, and I think of Howard Markline and Todd Novak and Senator Petrowski from up north, all the rural poverty where people don't have health care, they just sat on their hands. How could they be more out of touch?
Yeah, I think, I've said for a long time that I think Novak and Markline, and you can certainly put a couple other members in, really are the most indefensible members of the Republican caucus. They're far worse, in my opinion, than, you know, pick your suburban Milwaukee right winger.
Dewey Strobel.
Pick them. You know? But I think they're far worse. And here's what I mean by that. They sit in the legislature as representatives who were elected, particularly Markline and Novak from Southwest Wisconsin, representatives who were elected with the message that they would be independent Republicans, that they would stand on principle and that they would put their region first. And the simple fact of the matter is they don't. They don't. If they did, they would be, doing, yeoman's work to enact huge portions of this budget. And that's just the truth. I mean, there is so much in this budget that is good for rural Wisconsin, particularly for Southwest Wisconsin. To give you an example, obviously the health care is vital. The education stuff is absolutely vital. There's simply no question of that. And then there are things that are not getting a lot of attention but should. The governor has a whole initiative in there on building out broadband and saying that the state is going to undo the damage done by Scott Walker, who literally began his governorship by turning down federal broadband money. And he is going to target it especially to underserved, difficult areas that have not been well served by some of the multinational corporations that do this. And he's even going to help small towns, municipalities, if they need to develop their own municipal broadband. I mean, that is a plan, I promise you, that any responsible rural Republican in Wisconsin history would have backed. And, today, Todd Novak, their support for stuff like that.
Just so you know, Tiny Krieger's been dead a while now.
Believe me, I understand. But you don't have to be a circus performer to be a good Republican. It just helps a little.
Here is a... People have no idea what we're talking about.
Tiny Krieger was a state senator from northern Wisconsin who...
Huge man.
Prior to... What?
He was a huge man.
He was a very large man who did, at one point in his career, did do some circus work.
Uh-huh.
Then he served as a Republican in the state legislature, absolutely defending labor rights, small towns, farmers. He was a great guy.
Merrill, Wisconsin. All right, here's a couple. Here, let me just play a couple more clips and then we'll wrap it up.
In addition to funding public schools at every level, I believe everyone should have the opportunity to participate in our democracy. People should be able to choose their elected officials, not the other way around. So earlier this week, we announced that we're creating a nonpartisan redistricting commission. And as it turns out, the people of Wisconsin agree. According to a recent Marquette Law poll, 72% of Wisconsinites want nonpartisan redistricting in Wisconsin. Yeah.
And then he said this.
I've heard some remark that people of Wisconsin chose divided government this November. I don't think that's the case. I think the people of Wisconsin didn't choose us to be divided. They chose us to find it within ourselves to be united, not in party, but in promise, to serve our state and to do what's best for the people who sent us here.
They didn't clap at that.
I know. It's sort of like... I think they were still...
That's like saying you hate apple pie.
Well, no, it's not even apple pie. Some people don't like apples. I mean, I don't know what it is. It's like M&M. You know, I mean, but the incredible thing is I think they were still recovering from the Pulse data on the popularity of redistricting reform. You know, because you realize that our dear Republican friends in the legislature, the one thing they know is that they wouldn't win fair elections.
Well, at least a lot of them.
No, I mean, they know full well that their majority is built on gerrymandering, right? And so I would venture to say if they had to choose, right, and you said, okay, you can get everything else that you want, right? You can literally enact the Robin Voss budget, right? The Robin Voss wish list budget for Wisconsin Republicans if you'll accept redistricting reform. What do you think? Which one would they choose?
Oh, I can tell you exactly what they would choose. Self-preservation, my friend. Self-preservation.
That's it. So I think they're horrified by the notion of unified and functional government and trying to do good for everybody, because you start to talk too much about stuff like that, you end up actually reforming things and fixing things and having fair elections.
So would it be fair to paraphrase this moment yesterday? And I found it to be, first of all, he did much better this time than his first address to the state of the state. He's gotten much better. Then he threaded the needle. He found a way to be Wisconsin nice, genuine Wisconsin nice, accommodating, reaching out to the other side, at the same time as coming out with a bold, progressive budget.
Yes, this is a much more progressive budget than I think a lot of folks who voted for him expected. They wanted it. The fact of the matter is that I think that Tony Evers was elected governor because I think people did want an end to Walker and Walkerism. I think people thought he's a decent guy, right? They thought, yeah, it's a good guy. He'll at least be a good steward of state government. But this is much more than that. You know, when you look at this budget, if you read through it as a whole, it is a budget about moving Wisconsin from where Scott Walker tried to put it, right, which is back to the Gilded Age, back to an age where wealthy, out-of-state people, billionaires, millionaires in the past, got to guide the affairs of the state. You know, 120 years ago, it was railroad magnates and grain mill operators and
loggers,
you know, but it's people with a lot of money.
And
we had a progressive movement in Wisconsin. We got, we turned that away. Now it's Koch brothers and, Sheldon Adelson and all sorts of other, speculators, basically bad players, from outside Wisconsin. Same thing though. And so what Evers is suggesting is that he doesn't just want to not be Walker, right? He wants to move Wisconsin into the 21st century, right, into now. And to do that, there's certain things you have to do, right, especially as we move to a gig economy, lots of changes in how our work operates. You're going to have health care guarantees. You're going to have much, deeper and broader commitments to education. Those are requirements of the era in which we are, entering into. You're also going to have to build out that broadband. You're going to have to provide protections for workers and more extensive protections. And so the governor proposing in this budget to get rid of the so-called right-to-work law is a big deal. Protecting prevailing wage, that's a big deal. Building out broadband, big deal. You know, you kind of run down this list. This is, in my opinion, the most important budget that a Democratic governor has presented, really, certainly since the days of Pat Lucey, and I would pretend, maybe even go back to the days of Gaylord Nelson. It's that big a deal.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
Thank you, sir.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.